Hey everyone, welcome to Recovery Rocks. This episode is sponsored by the folks at Sour Humanoid Vinegar.
And Sour
when I say the folks, I mean my partner who just started this amazing vinegar brand. Sour Humanoid is designed for cooking, created by a New York City sommelier who got sober after working at Michelin-starred restaurants and curating award-winning wine lists. This vinegar is an excellent way to make any meal special with very little effort. Check out some of the easy recipes at sourhumanoid.com. And we've had Nick on an episode before. He's, you know, a fellow sober entrepreneur, and we're excited to have Sour Humanoid sponsor this episode.
It's an amazing story, and I will give a brief testimonial just because I don't cook, but I have sent Sour Humanoid gift packs as gifts over the holidays to a couple of my friends who are big cooks, and it got rave reviews. So user tested, customer tested. And all thumbs up. Hey, everybody. Welcome. I am Lisa here, as always, with my most excellent friend.
Tawny.
What's up?
How are you, my love?
I'm good. And I'm excited because today we have with us very cool Casey Davidson from Hello Someday Coaching and the Kick-Ass Hello Someday podcast. We're really excited. And for those of you who don't know Casey, I'm going to sort of pick off her the bio that is on her HelloSomedayCoaching.com website, because I think the way she put it on her bio just really captures what I think so many of our listeners and all of us experience, and I think will really resonate. So this is how Casey described her story, and then I'll let her actually tell us about her story. But she wrote, after 20 years of climbing the corporate ladder at big companies and small startups, I wasn't in love with the life I was living. My life looked pretty good from the outside, but didn't feel good on the inside. I had too many commitments and not enough hours in the day. I was constantly going, yet filled with an anxious energy I could never quite release. I'd hurry home after work, feeling desperate to relax and immediately open a bottle of wine. I'd drink the bottle and sometimes more while cooking dinner, helping with homework, doing the dishes, and watching TV. And this is like in bold and pink on the website. And this is something so many of us, I know I had all the time. And then I would wake up at 3 a.m. with my mind racing and my heart pounding, feeling like complete shit. Like that was me. I'd worry about how to handle the business trip next week, get to daycare to pick up on time, manage everything in between, and how I'd get through the morning with a headache and a hangover. It was exhausting. The producing, delivering, overthinking, self-sabotage, overcompensating, and trying to look like I had it all together. Something needed to change. I wanted to feel happy, in control, and at peace. And wow, that just completely, and I should say, Casey became a certified life coach and master practitioner in core energy leadership to help other women who've gotten into the habit of drinking too much or too often to reevaluate their relationship with alcohol, get out of overwhelm, and create lives they love. Welcome, Casey.
Oh, thank you so much. I told you guys before we talked that I'm totally fangirling right now because, Lisa, I read your book, Good Girl Walks Out of a Bar, when I was 9 months sober back in 2016. I literally was like up in my daughter's room as I was rocking her to sleep and like reading it on my phone. So, and Tawny, I've been wanting to meet you forever.
Well, I'm so excited to meet you. And, you know, I love that you and I are equally fangirling, Lisa, because Lisa and I.
Oh, me.
Lisa and I, we met on Instagram, but we met IRL at her book signing. And I was like, I was 1 year sober when we met IRL, and she was doing a reading. It was at, was it at a law firm?
It was at the New York City Bar Association.
I was like, oh my God, like this woman has her shit together.
You know me.
But you know what I mean. I was like, she wrote a book. She's sober. She's like she's openly talking about being on, you know, having medication to help her and her treatment program. And I just, that was the message I needed to hear at 1 year sober. And Lisa gave me her 1 year AA chip. And
I did.
So yeah, Lisa's book also, I read that in early sobriety. And so let's just talk about how much we love Lisa.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, but enough about me. When did you stop drinking as well? I know you hit 6 years.
Yes. So you and I are similar. So you were February 18th, 2016, right?
Yeah.
So I was November 30th, 15. So just a couple months before you.
That's
cool. About 6.5 years now, which is truly insane to.
It's incredible.
To think about that is, and Lisa just celebrated 18 years.
I know. I saw that. That is amazing.
Thank
Lisa.
You. Thank
and, you.
You
know, of course, my sobriety date was supposed to be January 1st, but it was February 18th.
Yeah. But it works out the way it should.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. So I would love to hear, tell us a little bit about, like, I think what I read from your bio is what so many people feel. And we feel like we're, until we realize, you know, and come out into contact with other people. Similarly, it feels like such a lonely, isolated, it's only me experience. But, you know, those feelings that you explain in your description are so universal. That was one of the things that I really came to appreciate so much. And so I think there are probably a lot of people listening who are sort of considering, like, is it, you know, do I really need to stop? Do I, like, what was it for you? Like, what made you say, all right, now I'm done?
Well, like, honestly, quitting drinking was my worst case scenario, like the absolute worst case scenario, because I loved it so much. Mm-hmm. Like, I truly was like, I need to get this under control so that I never have to stop drinking. And I stayed there a really, really, really long time. I mean, I was always, I didn't drink in high school because I went to boarding school. And if I drank, I would have gotten suspended or expelled. And my parents lived in Africa. And so I was like, are we allowed to swear? I don't know.
Oh, yes. Okay. Fire away.
I was like, fuck, I have nowhere to go if I get expelled and my parents are going to kill me. So basically did not drink all through high school. And then I got to college and was just, okay, I moved every 2 or 3 years my entire life. And I was like, you know, I was like a system. I was like, I have 2 weeks to meet absolutely everyone before everybody gets in their groups. So I was like, you know, an Animal House, that guy who goes around and is like, I'm so-and-so, damn glad to meet you. And then goes on to the other guy. I was like on a mission. And I went to all the keg parties and I was like, oh my God, beer is amazing. Cause I made all these friends. And then I joined the women's rugby team. And, you know, at this liberal arts school, wow, which is like a crash course in binge drinking. I mean, truly, they have all these rituals. I mean, we did keg stands on the regular. We were drinking out of funnels. Like the goal was to get blackout drunk. And, you know, you got a lot of positive feedback if you booted and rallied, meaning throw up and then drink again. And I thought that was so much fun because I was like straight A girl, totally in my head, like pretty much, you know, never was always really conscious of what other people thought of me.
Yeah.
And so college was great, still got A's, you know, all was good in my mind. And then graduated college, went to my first corporate job and just felt, you know, all the imposter syndrome and all the like, oh my God, I'm going to get fired and total anxiety. And my dad actually got diagnosed with pancreatic cancer when I was like about 4 months out of college. And he was told he had 6 months to live, but my mom was like, you can't come home, you know?
Oh,
and I was a total daddy's girl. So I drank, right? I thought I was super sophisticated, but I couldn't cook. Because I'd gone to boarding school and like college for the last 8 years. So I would eat like mac and cheese with a bottle of red wine or like Lucky Charms for dinner. I mean, I was just like, I am so adult this is awesome, right? It was so bad. And, you know, basically like at every phase of my life, I would just sort of always drink like 7 nights a week, but like change what I was drinking for the different phase of my life. So, you know, it became going out to bars in my early 20s. And then I moved to Seattle with my boyfriend and like, you know, we were drinking beers on our kayaks on Lake Union. And then we were drinking, you know, champagne at mimosas. And then we bought a house and had all the big dinner parties with all the bottles of wine. And the whole time I'm sort of climbing the corporate ladder, increasing levels of stress and huge imposter syndrome. But I was always like the youngest director in company history and like on the inside, just barely keeping it together. And it, you know, I had anxiety and I was like freaking out. So I did everything except quitting drinking, which I think all of us do.
Oh, yeah. Right?
Like, exactly.
Oh my God, I need to do Pilates or I need to run a 10K or I need to go to therapy or I need anti-anxiety meds or like went to my doctor, my therapist and was like, I have horrible insomnia and all this anxiety and I can't handle my life. Did not, you know, how much do you drink? Oh, a couple glasses of wine, a couple nights a week, not like a bottle plus of wine, 7 nights a week. And she was like, yeah, let's get you Ambien. You know, so I was like, on Ambien,
oh, wow,
I was on like Prozac and I was drinking a bottle of wine a night and, you know, but still like trying to get up to do 5:30 workouts. And I mean, I knew the whole time it was unsustainable. I mean, I remember my son was like 6 months old and I found Drinking a Love Story by Carolyn Knapp, you know, and I was like, yeah. And it had this glass of red wine on the cover and I was like, yeah, that's me. It's a love story. And I read it and I read it on my Kindle. I mean, this is how like paranoid I was or in the dark or terrified of stopping. So I would read it on my Kindle. And then every time I stopped, I would also like read it while drinking red wine as one does, right? That's
exactly.
Maybe
exactly.
Not. Maybe that was just me.
No. Totally.
Yeah, you're not just
read
you.
The Quitlet. While drinking.
Yeah.
But I would like finish reading and then I would open five other books, like so that the book would be pushed down in my Kindle queue if my husband ever picked it up. Like I was so deep
in case he wanted to scroll through your Kindle and then berate you about reading a memoir.
Or just be like, more like, why is she reading this? Because I drank a lot. But he never really said anything. So I thought if I tipped him off that I was worried about it, he would like watch me more closely. I mean, it was ridiculous.
I totally get that. I get that.
Do?
Yeah. No, this is like, I mean, everything you're saying is, it's managing, you know, and then the secrets and the hiding. And we all had our own versions of that.
Yeah. Oh my God. And so I like at the time after I read that, and then a couple other things, I like wrote myself like a letter in a Word document that I like titled something else and saved on my computer.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it's like I'm watching porn or something, right? I'm like, let me put this buried in some random file. And I was like, oh my God, I think I have a problem. I need to stop drinking. This is bad. Am I an alcoholic? What's going on? And then like, 4 days later, I literally went back into the Word doc and like wrote on top of it, like, just kidding, nothing to see here. I was totally over, like to myself, I still have the letter. Like it's ridiculous. And that was like 5 years before I stopped for the first time and 8 years before I stopped finally. So it was deep. And the first time I went to, you know, I specifically picked a therapist who specialized in anxiety and addiction, right? Because I was like, shit, I drank too much. But I went in and I was like, oh my God, my boss and my stress and my husband doesn't help me. And I've got a, you know, 5-year-old kid and I drank a bottle of wine a night. And he was like, yeah, let's talk about your drinking. And I'm like, no, you didn't hear me. Let's talk about my boss and my husband.
Yep.
And he was like, yeah, let's talk about your drinking. So He was in AA. He was sober through the program. This was six years. This was 9 years ago. And I feel like at that time, all these new methods of sort of quitting drinking and the sober curious movement and the openness and blogs and podcasts, like there was very little out there other than AA at the time, or at least I didn't know of anything. So I joined this secret online Facebook group that I absolutely love and like posted for the first time and was terrified. And then all these women came back and were like, oh my God, your story is my story. And I'm just like you. And I posted a picture of me and my little redheaded 5-year-old son. And they were like, he's beautiful. And, you know, you're not a bad person. And I was in tears. Like, you know, again, I like copied everything and put it in my Word doc. Apparently I was really big on Word documents.
Very corporate of you.
You're being so real and vulnerable, which I really appreciate, because that's something that like I still do, like the secret Google Docs of like, oh, I'll just name this something else. And it's like, it's just that is, I so appreciate you sharing. Well, that.
Looking back, I'm like, this is so fucking ridiculous, because now I'm like, of course you got addicted to an addictive substance. Like,
yes,
that's working as designed. Like it is really with enough exposure and the right social circle and the right underlying like anxiety or whatever it is. Yeah. Like if you drink enough and often enough, you are going to become addicted, like whether it's habitually or emotionally or physically, like whatever it is. And when you love it because of the way it impacts your brain and you get that dopamine hit and all, you know, it works for a while, you don't want to quit. And so now looking back at how terrified I was and all the measures I went through to not stop drinking because of the stigma or the label, or I didn't want anyone to know I had a problem. And if I admitted that I was even worried about it, I would have to stop forever, right? Because they would know. It's so crazy. And I just love right now what you guys are doing and what everyone's doing online and on Instagram, because it's like, if you're worried about this, talk about it, take a break, look at it, you know, try it out for a while. Like it doesn't mean you're a quote unquote alcoholic. You know, you can adopt whatever label you want to, you know, and to this day, don't really call myself an alcoholic. I just say, yeah, I used to drink a ton and I quit drinking and it's super addictive. It's incredibly hard to quit. And it's, you know, I feel better without it. Now, if I'm around people who identify as an alcoholic, I'm like, oh yeah, that was, you know, like that was fucked up.
I'm same as you.
Yeah.
Like when I speak, like I was speaking last week to a group and I just said, you know, I'm in recovery from an addiction to alcohol.
Yeah.
Like I think I identify in an AA meeting as an alcoholic and I have no problem with that, but I don't even know what that means anymore. Like that idea has changed so much for me. And I think also like in the overall discussion, and there's just so many more ways, you know, it felt to me before, like either you were or you weren't.
Yeah.
And now there's just, no, it's all a spectrum. And, you know, like you said, like, that's why I was curious, like what you said about like, what makes you decide I'm going to stop here or I'm going to try to stop here.
And then, I mean, honestly, I quit. So that first time you know, in the online Facebook group, I met so many cool women.
Is that a group you'd recommend to people?
Oh God, yes. It's called the BFB, the Booze Free Brigade.
Booze Free Brigade.
Oh my God.
I recommend that all the time.
I love it. I love it because it's just so supportive. You know, I feel like in some groups and programs, there are a lot of newbies. There are a lot of people trying to quit drinking. And in the BFB, there are, I feel like the ratio of like one person struggling, there are like five people jumping in to support them who 100%. Are at like 2 years, 3 years, 6 years. Like there's still, people are so attached. They're super involved. And it's just,
and it's huge.
It's in, well, it's God, some of these like
and global
are like thousands and thousands. It's about 1500 people. I mean, I know the Unexpected Joy, which I love too. You go into that Facebook group and it's like 20,000 people. I'm like, wow. Oh my God. So I feel like it's still pretty small. It's super hard to find. So if anyone wants to join, you can go to my website. I've got a guide to find, like literally it's like 10 million steps. I mean, it's not that hard, but you have to like find someone and friend them and then they send you a message. And so All anyone sees on Facebook is that you guys have a mutual friend. Like there's no membership of anything. But it was started by, I mean, I feel like this was so long ago. It was started by Stephanie Wilder Taylor, who back in the day wrote all those, the books that are like, Sippy Cups Are Not for Chardonnay. And, you know, Nap Time is the New Happy Hour. And they came out when I had a 6-month-old. And trust me, I bought all those books for all my friends. I was like, you're my hero. She was a comedian, so they were really funny. And I was just like so deep in the mommy wine culture. And then when my son was a year old, I was down in, you know, hungover, down in, you know, the cafe under my office, getting a coffee and a giant breakfast sandwich to like soak it all up. And on the cover of like USA Today or something, there was a small, it might have been the New York Times, a small story that said, heroine of mommy wine culture gets sober. And she had come out, you know, the Friday or whatever after she quit. Like it was like 3 days after she was like, I have a problem. And they did this huge story on her. And she had a book that was about to be published that was another mommy wine drinking group. So when I was finally ready to quit, I went to her website. And she had this blog called Don't Get Drunk Fridays that had all these women's stories. And she basically had started the BFB, I mean, ages ago. And so I joined that group. Anyway, for anyone new, this is like ancient history. But I feel like even today, the way you find all the support out there, it's like these tiny divine breadcrumbs that like appear when you need them. And you just sort of pull on the string and you like find the next one and find the next one. And I mean, there's so many of us out there who, you know, haven't hit necessarily rock bottom or don't, you know, are still like fun and productive and do amazing things, but are like, fuck that alcohol thing. That'll pull you down.
Yes.
So like I knew too much because I quit for 4 months. I went to AA. I mean, it's true that they're like drinking, you know, recovery ruins you for drinking because like then every time you're hungover, every time you don't remember, you know, going to bed, you're like, fuck, you know too much. Of course, I got pregnant. I was like, oh, I don't have a problem. That was situational. It was, you know, I was too stressed out. I'm happier now. So the minute my daughter was born, I went back to drinking. Like, and I was kind of shocked that my husband was like, cool. Because I had been to AA and he knew that. I'm like, who the fuck just says nothing when I'm like, you know, I think I'm going to open a bottle of wine. But he didn't. And it took me 22 months to stop again. And they weren't, I mean, they were fun at times, like maybe 20% were all those drinking highlights. But like 80% was me like falling asleep on the couch. I'm doing air quotes because I totally passed out and my husband couldn't wake me up. And the 3 a.m., you know, oh my God, anxiety and putting on eyeliner with bloodshot eyes. And the reason I finally stopped was I was kind of afraid for my mental health. Like I was like, shit, this is bad. You know, I was kind of shaky. I was feeling like I couldn't cope with life. And I had this great life, you know, from externally. Like I was a director at L'Oreal. I had 2 beautiful kids. I'd been married 14 years to a really great guy. And yet, like the thought that would run through my mind maybe three times a day was like, I want to shoot myself. And which of course, like I wasn't actually suicidal, but that was like, it was just a metaphor for, I was really unhappy.
Get me out. Yeah.
Yeah. So I hired a sober coach, which is why I do it now, because, you know, it just, it helped me. And I emailed her every single day and she didn't like label it. It's Belle from Tired of Thinking About Drinking. She lives in Paris and she wrote a book called Tired of Thinking About Drinking. But I emailed her every day. I did, you know, phone calls from her. I would like block out my work calendar and like sit in my car because she was in Paris. And it just, I built up suddenly like 30 days and 60 and 100. And then I was like, wow, I feel so much better. So then I went for 6 months and then I went for a year. And it actually wasn't until I got to a year that I was like, I think I'm done.
I love that.
You know?
I love that. I love just like not putting that label on it because, you know, we talk about a lot the idea that, you know, how toxic it can be to be counting days and feel like if you've somehow lost all the recovery, you haven't. And like, I know I say this over and over, but like, you know, with 18 years, I've never said I'm not going to drink again. I really would not have, you know, had this time if I was saying that, because that still is too big for me.
Yeah.
And I don't need to think about it that way. You know, it's today, as my sponsor used to tell me all the time, because I used to spin out on it early. And she was like, yesterday is over. Tomorrow is going to take care of itself. You know, just do it today. That's all.
Yeah. Like, and I have no intention of drinking again, of course, because I tried that, right? I stopped. I felt way better. My life was better. I was happier. And then I drank again and it brought me to that same super low place. And finally I was like, oh, it's the substance. You know what I mean? Like it took, you know, it took a lot of like, oh, you know, like it's not my boss, my husband, my job, you know, having kids, having no time. It's actually the alcohol.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And it's, but it's, I love how like you built a body of proof upon it first, and same with Tawny, right? Before saying, yeah, this is the direction I'm going to go in for, you know, this is what I see for my future.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've never used the alcoholic word. That never resonated with me. But I came up, you know, in the New York City Ruby Warrington sober curious world. You know, I stopped drinking November of 2015, and that's around the time that Ruby started leading these events in Brooklyn, and that's how I met her. And you know, she called it Club Soda, sober or debating abstinence.
Wow.
And
so accessible.
I know. I loved that. And it was like, it was the first time I went to a social gathering where alcohol was not part of it was not the glue. You know, there were I think Curious Elixirs was probably the only non-alcoholic drink at the time that was like trendy, you know, like, I was like, oh, cool. I'm drinking this like really yummy drink with no alcohol. And I'm around like people my age that are like, you know, it was like, you know, it's in Williamsburg. It's like hipster, glamorous. Like these are like cool. Like these are like cool people. I was like, wow, that I've only seen this type of crowd in a bar. And it was the first time that I'd been in a space like that where I was like, wow, I feel comfortable here. I want to stay. I want to get to know these people. I met people there. You know, Ruby and I have since become friends. And like, I never thought that going to Lisa's event would mean that she and I would become as close as we are. But
Or we'd do a podcast.
Or we would do a pod, you know, but like, we didn't. I don't even know if Ruby said sober curious back then, but just she held space for people considering, you know, debating abstinence. I really liked that terminology. And even in my writing that I do now, I say, you know, whether you're sober or reevaluating your relationship with alcohol, I think it's the same thing, whether you're 20 years sober or whether you're doing a dry month. Like, you can sit with us. you know, you're welcome.
Yeah, it's so important to meet other people who you kind of, you know, I mean, in AA, they say if you want what they have, but yes, like people who feel like you, because if it feels like it's so removed from your current social experience, it's going to be like, oh my God, I have to give up all of these things in my life in order to not feel like garbage every day. And instead, I mean, what I've found, and it sounds like you guys too, is that your life actually gets way more interesting bigger once you stop drinking. Like, my drinking was pretty small. Like, I was like, do I have enough wine at home? Or can I like ask someone to go to the bar, you know?
Well, and it's repetitive. It's like, when I look back at that chapter of my life, I was in Groundhog Day. I was living the same day over and over. It was not exciting or interesting. There's nothing interesting about it at all. I was having, quote, fun. I mean, don't get me wrong, I had fun.
Right. Yeah.
But like you said, for every, you know, being the party girl bartender, for every night that I was on the bar dancing to Kesha, there was a, you know, there was a dozen nights of me at home crying because I didn't have the words to describe what I was feeling. I didn't know what PTSD or depression or anxiety was. I didn't know why I was only happy when I was dancing on a bar. I didn't know that then. And
yeah,
so it's like, you know, I think it's also important to hold space for those, like giving ourselves grace of like, yes, alcohol like is not for us anymore, but it also served a place. It served a role. At least in my life, I can see that it served a role. It helped me. It was a coping strategy for me. You know, it was not healthy and it was, you know, there was nothing healthy about it, but it helped me cope. It helped me get through the day. And now I have healthy coping skills to get through the day.
Yeah. And I think also like there is when it owned me, you know, because it really did, it owned me. It was my first waking moment till the end. And in that life, I couldn't imagine a life where it didn't own me. You know what I mean? What would I do if I wasn't a drinker? Like what? I couldn't see not just the social stuff, but also what the hell's going to go on in my head if I get into it. And, you know, there was so much fear around it. And that was why I think for me, like I extended all of those, but I'm going to get it under control. I can get this. Okay. I've taken the next awful step, but I'll get this under control, you know? And why wouldn't we think that we could get it under control when we've had a career and a family and you know, whatever it is. And, you know, then it was like, that's why to me, like the relief is in the end of that, you know, obsession, not only that, but also like the people who do things like when I started meeting friends in 12 step, you know, like I met a musician who was like kind of a failed musician. And then when I met him, he was sober for like 10 years. He was doing all this cool music stuff and he was touring. And then a few years ago, like he played with Robert Plant. Like, you know what I mean? Like that doesn't happen to some guy who's like hanging in the bar, just drinking. And, you know, the one I always say is like, I used to sit in a bar and be like, I'm going to write a book. And then I got sober and wrote a book. Like that's how it works. Like when they say you can have a life beyond your wildest dreams, to me, I mean, that was easy because my wildest dream was, you know, shutting my door, getting an eight ball, having like all my booze, locking all the doors, pulling all the curtains on a Friday night and emerging on Monday. Like that was my wildest dream. So yeah, it's you can't even really imagine where you can go when you're in it.
Yeah. You know what's funny? So do you guys know Christy Coulter?
Yeah.
She wrote Nothing Good Can Come From This.
Great.
And she had this amazing article essay called Anjali that if anyone has
that's how she
read,
got the book deal that that article went viral.
Such
so
a
good
great article.
It was so good. Well, so I met her before she wrote Anjali, so but she was writing on a blog and I heard her on some podcast, I don't remember which. And you know, when you talk about certain people's stories resonating with you. So I was within my first 100 days of sobriety. I mean, early on, heard her on this podcast and she lived in Seattle. And I'm like, I live in Seattle. And she worked at Amazon, which now is, you know,
her next book
her
is like an Amazon tell all.
Read it. And she was talking about, you know, the male dominated sort of condescending, patronizing work culture. And I worked in tech and I was like, yep. And she had quit drinking with Belle and I was working with Belle. And so I emailed her. I like found, you know, this email on her blog and emailed her and was like, you have no idea who I am, but basically like I'm working with Belle. I'm like 62 days sober. I work in tech in Seattle, like whatever. I heard you on this podcast, loved it. And like 4 days went by and I was like, I'm never going to hear from her again. And she then an email popped up and she was like, hey, happy day 66 today, you know, and I was just like, aww. Oh, my God. And then my friend Ingrid, who was also early sober, she's like 60 days behind me. Her big concern was like, I'm going to have no social life when I quit drinking. I mean, she talks about how she would have dinner parties with like bowls of free cigarettes in case people wanted to like drink the Magnum and smoke and have all these crazy conversations. I was like, okay. And so she started hosting these dinner parties in her downtown like pod overlooking the Great Wheel on Saturday nights. And I got invited to them and like Christy Coulter was there and a stand-up comedian was there and all these women. And, you know, my life was like home with a 2-year-old, an 8-year-old in a suburb of Seattle. Like it used to be crazy. It was not like I was like, you know, driving to, you know, T-ball practice in my weekends. And so suddenly I had quit drinking and I'm in downtown Seattle on a Saturday night with like authors and comedians and cool women. And I was just like, weirdly, this sober life is so much cooler than my
life. Yes. I always say the cool kids get sober.
Yeah.
Everything you're describing, you know, art and creativity and connection, and those are exciting, fun, interesting things to be around. And when I was drinking, I wasn't writing. I wasn't doing anything creative. You know, I was full-time bartending, like what the hell am I going to be when I grow up kind of thing. And I got sober and I found my voice as a writer. And, you know, I'm not going to say it's all perfect. It's not. We all, sobriety's fucking hard. But it is significantly better. The managing of my drinking was so much energy and so much work. And for me, it's just easier to have it off the table. It's just like, I look at it like an allergy, you know, it's like, I just can't have this. It's just not good for me. And
it doesn't fit anymore. Your life's too big to be like hungover every day and you build a life that you want to be present for. Yeah. Like that's I love about one. What you do, Casey, is that, you know, you talk about helping women build a life they love.
Yeah.
You know, it's not a punishment to get sober. It's a gift. And from it, you know, then you get the opportunity, at least speaking from my experience, I only had the opportunity to build a happy life and to learn to even like myself or respect myself, let alone like love life, when I stopped drinking. Like that was, but it's like, okay, you know, now I'm going to not drink, but now I want to live. I get this opportunity. I want to take it.
One of my favorite things that I do, because like most of the women I work with, because it was my experience, are still pretty high functioning, right? Like lots of working moms, lots of women who like it looks all together, but they're struggling, obviously, significantly. And one of the things I love, it's like, I was like, God, you know, when they say like sobriety's hard, I'm like, drinking and holding it together, like that's fucking hard. Like
it's the amount of effort, all day.
It's exhausting. And so I'm like, you have been like running a marathon with this like ball and chain tied to your ankle.
Right. Yep.
And like you get rid of the ball and chain and you're just like, I can do anything. And so like the first part of the coaching I do is pretty similar for most women, right? Getting out of the drinking cycle, going through the ups and downs of early sobriety, all your limiting beliefs about life without drinking. How do you tell people, you know, what do you replace your rewards with? That process, everyone's different, but the process feels similar to me. But then once you sort of transition from like sober coaching as primary to like sober coaching as the foundation and then life coaching, to me, that's like every woman is different. And I think that's beyond cool, right? Because what's underneath why we drink for everyone is different, whether it's like I'm a square peg in a round hole in my career and I've been, you know, I'm terrified to leave it, or my marriage has serious issues, or I've got an underlying anxiety issue, which I did and had no idea because I blamed myself, right?
Me too. I got diagnosed in the psych hospital. Yeah.
Yep.
Like I have a mood disorder, like a mild mood disorder and anxiety. And I just couldn't even get clear on that when I was drinking. Like it was so different. Like I was like hangovers and depression and this and that. And I could never also like admit to anyone that I was struggling with something that felt very bad because I was afraid they'd tell me to stop drinking. And like, you know, it was just so convoluted.
Shall we we've got to do it.
We've got to chat music.
Yeah, we've got to chat music.
I know. I love that you guys talk about that.
Yes. So, Casey, is there a song that you're vibing to right now? It can connect to sobriety or not, you know,
just or something that got you, you know, that was like your sober anthem or anything.
Yeah.
Like that.
I mean, when you guys told me we were doing this, I immediately thought of my sober anthem that was like back in the day. And I actually recently like just did a sort of video, but of all the images of the last 6 years when I got 6 years sober. And I set it to this song just because I was like, it's been such a journey. And so the song I love is called The Fighter by Gym Class Heroes. Do you guys know that at all?
Oh, yeah.
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 I mean,
oh, so cool.
The first line, I mean, I used to go running to it, you know, in early sobriety.
Oh my God,
and I like,
I love it.
Could not run, but I did my first 10K in my first 2 months. Like, it was just crazy. But the song starts, the first two lines are just waking up in the morning and to be well, you know?
Yeah.
And I was just like, wow, that was great. And, you know, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Well, I was just thinking like, so I quit on February 18th and I ran my 10K. The only reason I know the date, it was April 24th, is because it was my son's birthday. And even though it was his birthday, I like woke up early by myself, ran this 10K and then like picked up his cake and did all the things. Oh. But as I was running, I was like in tears because I was like, I am now a person who does what I say I'm going to do.
Yes.
Oh my God. I love that. I love that. Wow. And like, I feel like in my early recovery, the soundtracks that I would exercise to, I would find so much meaning in the songs.
Oh yeah.
You just start to like, I would start to identify, and those would sort of like bring tears and make me, even though it was some random thing, like, you know, that might have, whatever it was, but there are just these little snippets, like what you just mentioned, that line that stick, right? Like Tawny has from Snow, right?
Yeah. Red Hot Chili Peppers Snow. The more I see, the less I know, the more I like to let it go. And that line, it evolves with me. Like, it means different things to me at different times, but it's always connected to, there's so much to learn about yourself, about life, about other people. And the more you learn, you're like, wow, I really don't know much, you know?
Yeah.
It's fascinating. And Lisa tells me that I'm intellectually curious.
She's the most intellectually curious person I've ever met. That's amazing. I love it. It's the best quality a person can have, I swear.
It drives me crazy that there's so much I want to learn about and I'm never going to be able to learn like a fraction of it, you know? But that song really, really resonates with that line. So that was Casey. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Casey.
Yeah. And I can't wait to talk to you guys soon about your stories.
Yes. So listeners, Lisa and I are also going to be a guest on Casey's podcast.
Yes.
So,
and we'll share that with you.
Yeah. If you want
to, I'm dying to hear all about it because as you guys are talking, I have a million questions.
Well, take notes and then we'll compare notes. But okay, Casey, before we let you go, just let people know where they can find you and reach out.
Yeah, I mean, the easiest way to find me is at hellosomedaycoaching.com, and there you'll find links to free guides. You know, I have a 30 tips for your first 30 days, and also my podcast.
Yes.
Perfect. We'll have links to all of that in the show
notes.
Very cool. So. Well, thank you guys. It's been such an honor.
Thank you, Casey. Stay here.
Thanks for listening. We hope you like what you heard. If so, please hit subscribe and consider rating and reviewing us so others can find us. Tawny, how can our listeners find you?
You can find me at Tawny M. Lara on all of the social medias. And you can find my blog, sobrietyparty.com. Lisa, how can we find you and your amazing book?
My book is Girl Walks Out of a Bar, and it is available at bookstores everywhere and online. And you can find me at lisasmithadvisory.com. And I'm on social media at Girl Walks Out. Thanks for listening.